Medical rewrites, medical rewrites, medical.
Hello and welcome. This is Medical Rewrites, the podcast that rewrites movie scenes with evidence-based medicine. I am Megan Jeffries. The rewrite today is for We're the Millers. The deep dive is about management of tarantula attack. This podcast definitely contains spoilers. We're the Millers was released in 2013. They had a budget of $37 million, which is kind of a lot for a broad comedy. Box office grossed $270 million, so definitely made some cash. IMDb rates it a 7 out of 10, pretty standard for a good comedy. Rotten Tomatoes critics are brutal. They come in with a hot 48%. Audience a little bit more generous, 76%. Me, I'm about solid B+ here. This is a very good casual weekend watch. And it's going to get even better with the rewrite that we're going to do today. To understand the rewrite, in case you haven't seen We're the Millers lately, here's the scene that's important to us today. David, who's played by Jason Sudeikis, is a high-end marijuana dealer in Denver, Colorado. Shout out, Denver. Rose, who's played by Jennifer Aniston, is an exotic dancer. David and Rose live in the same apartment complex. Also living in this apartment complex building is Kenny, who's played by Will Poulter. If you can picture him, he has the most fantastic eyebrows of any actor currently in the biz. So Kenny's mom is a bit of a flake and leaves Kenny home alone for long stretches. David gets robbed by neighborhood hoodlums. He's trying to sort of stick up for Kenny. The cash that the hoodlums take is cash that's owed to David's upstream, now very angry, drug dealing boss. In exchange, the boss sends David on a trip to Mexico to bring back, quote, a smidge and a half of marijuana. Turns out to be like bales and bales of marijuana. For the trip, David thinks he can decrease his level of suspiciousness at the border crossing in Mexico if he appears to be a family on a family trip. So he recruits Kenny, Rose, and Casey to pose as a family taking a trip to Mexico and, you know, be one of the crew. While in Mexico, they get the smidge and a half of marijuana. They're driving away erratically from this drug house. A tarantula climbs into the RV at that time that David has rented for the trip. The tarantula then crawls up Kenny's shorts, and then we get the sort of following aftermath. Tarantula up the shorts of Kenny. And roll the clip.
Oh my God.
Hey, settle down,
hey,
man.
Oh my God.
What the hell's going on?
Oh my God. I'm gonna die.
Kenny, listen to me. Hey, calm down, all right? Sorry. You're not gonna die. Will you tell us what the hell's going on?
Just tell us what happened.
Spider bit me, David.
What? Where did it happen?
Bit me on my balls. On my balls.
Let me see it. Kenny, let me see it.
You're not seeing it.
Just, Kenny, come on. Just... I can't help you unless you show it to me. Please, sweetie, just show it to me.
What? What is it? What does he look like? I can't look. Is it bad?
Listen.
Hey, listen to me. It's not that bad.
Dude, it's really bad.
No, it isn't.
Have you seen what you're telling me? You're going to a hospital.
No. What? No.
How bad
is absolutely.
It?
Absolutely. Kenny, you're okay. Let's go. Rub some dirt on. Let's get back in the
Kenny,
RV. Let's go.
I can't feel my big girl.
Kenny is fine.
So Kenny's passed out, and Rose says, we have to take Kenny to the hospital. Following Rose's suggestion, the Millers take Kenny to the hospital. They're in the waiting room for an update on his condition where the following conversation takes place between David and the doctor. And roll tape two.
What's the news, Doc, huh? Can we get going?
He's prepared to tell us.
Oh, good.
Well, I'm afraid your son has had a pretty severe allergic reaction to the spider's venom.
Ooh, that's too bad. We better get him home then, huh? Where is he?
Well, he's in a fair amount of pain right now, so we won't be able to release him for a few hours yet.
Why?
David. Why? David, stop it. Please. Continue.
He's on an IV to get some antibiotics.
Who cares, man? Go get my son and bring him and his giant nut out here.
That's it.
Right
Stop
now.
It. Okay, right what? Now. Stop it. Doctor, thank you very much. I appreciate you taking care of our son. Thank you very much.
Sure. You seem like a very caring father.
So to recap these two scenes, a tarantula has interacted with Kenny's scrotum. The doctor has made the diagnosis of severe allergic reaction, yet he has also initiated IV antibiotics. This is a mismatch of diagnosis and treatment. Allergic reactions, we're thinking antihistamines, anti-inflammatories, a dash of epi if things have gone sideways. Antibiotics have nothing to do with this, maybe causing allergic reactions, but certainly not the management of. You could get a secondary infection, right? Certainly you could have breakdown of the dermis, breakdown of the skin. We get a secondary bacterial infection, but that is a timeline that is days, maybe weeks, definitely not hours. So get your shovels. We're going on a deep dive into the management of tarantula attacks. In the scenario when I don't know anything about the topic, I tend to go to up-to-date first in terms of getting a scope. Let's have a brief understanding of what the medical Wikipedia has to offer us. And I have to tell you, up-to-date is quite dismissive of spider bites. It offers a brief summary of spider bites with local reactions. The authors state that most local reactions to spider bites resolve spontaneously in approximately 7 to 10 days. They occasionally become secondarily infected with skin-derived bacteria. Zero references accompany this statement. Two paragraphs later, UpToDate includes a section on urticating hairs and allergic reactions caused by tarantulas. So this is the first tarantula-specific data. Without references, it states that these non-aggressive spiders rarely bite, and when threatened, they dislodge small barbed hairs at the posterior of their abdomens and launch them at their attackers. I'm envisioning this porcupine style. That's my addition, not UpToDate's. These urticating hairs may cause irritation if they come in contact with skin, eyes, or mucous membranes. That's the end of their summary. And here's where we have our first references. The most recent of which was published in 2008, and the oldest is in 1973. Based on this underwhelming reference list, I end up just exploring PubMed myself. I come to it with an open mind about Kenny's medical crisis, and if there really is more likely this is a reaction to tarantula venom, a reaction to tarantula hair, or in a very odd circumstance, a skin infection misdiagnosed as a spider bite. Let's start with the clinical exam. I had to screen grab frame by frame so I could give you a good description of the clinical exam. It is a harrowing picture to have screen grabbed on your phone, and one that could get you screened at TSA for odd choices. Again, in the movie, we're gifted with a pretty good visualization of the injury in a couple of frames. The right testicle is significantly swollen, and I'm saying if we're going by fruit measurements, we've got grapefruit. Grapefruit size, right testicle. There's a small wound at the center of the testicle, which is surrounded by two concentric circles. The inner circle is blanched, is white tissue. I'm guessing it's approximately 1 inch in diameter. The second circle is beefy red, approximately 3 inches in diameter. It's hard to tell if the center wound has two little cuts that would represent tarantula fangs, but there is a central wound causing the surrounding tissue changes. There's definitely a black mark. Hard to tell if those are two black fang marks or a single one. Let's talk about reaction to tarantula venom first. PubMed does not contain loads of primary research about the clinical course of management of tarantula bites. There is an excellent case report in a review of the literature that's published in 2014, which is way more recent than what UpToDate is offering, ironically. In the case report, the man bitten was a keeper of many spider pets. His tarantula bite was on his right index finger, and it was 18 hours before presenting to the emergency room. He had been bitten by a different tarantula 2 years ago previously and described the sensation to be comparable to a bee sting. He did not seek medical care for the first tarantula bite, but this one, bite number two, hurt bad enough that he came to the hospital. He has also experienced the urticating hairs on his skin, and he described it as a burning sensation similar to nettle stings, so different from a bee sting. Right after the most recent, this bite number two, the man reported only minimal swelling and erythema and no localized pain. 2 hours after the bite, he experienced intense hot flashes and was sweating profusely. The duration of the symptoms he described as short-lived. Then 15 hours later, he started experiencing severe muscle spasms that started in his hand, sort of where the bite took place, and also in his feet. They subsequently spread to his arms and his legs and culminated in chest pain, which is what brought him to the emergency room. Good choices being made. In the ED, he got 2 milligrams of IV midazolam, which resolved the chest pain and decreased the leg cramps. He left the ED after 5 hours and self-treated twice daily with magnesium for 3 weeks until the remaining muscle cramps resolved. So this is follow-up. I think someone in the ED, or maybe he took magnesium himself. None sure if he managed to take magnesium orally without crapping his pants for those 3 weeks, but that was the duration that he took magnesium, which seemed to help with the muscle cramps. The authors of this case report and review of the literature include that the spider was not injured when she bit the man, but did unexpectedly die 2 months after the biting incident. I suspect it was from guilt or shame. After the conclusion of the case report, the authors also did a review of the literature, finding very little on PubMed. They also included accounts on different tarantula blog websites. They included 26 accounts of people being bitten that they self-reported on websites, think Reddit groups on tarantula management. And the authors grouped the reaction to spider bites into two different reactions: if the person experienced muscle cramps or no muscle cramps. Out of all of the 26 different accounts in their database, 42% of them reported no muscle cramps. The three most common symptoms of those patients were swelling, erythema, and pain. A minority of those that were bit reported itching, burning, nausea, sweating, joint stiffness, and chest tightness. 58%, so we're sort of doing a 40-60 split, the other 58% reported muscle cramps. The majority in this group also reported localized swelling, erythema, and high-intensity pain than the non-crampers. The onset of muscle cramping was an average of 10 hours after the bite. The cramps lasted 7 days on average. Long time. Self-treatment included squeezing the bite location or the whole finger to press out as much of the venom and maybe blood, keeping the bitten part of the body cold with ice water to reduce pain, or warm with hot patches to destroy the venom. We took a lot of different approaches here. None of these interventions essentially alleviated the pain. Of the people that were seen, they were treated with analgesics, including hydromorphone, ibuprofen, acetaminophen, and acetylsalicylic acid. Several got antihistamines, corticosteroids, and antibiotics. They also got high doses of magnesium, and frankly, for patients that were experiencing muscle cramps. The authors hypothesized that the difference between crampers and non-crampers could be based on tarantula species, size of tarantula, and therefore quantity of venom injected, and differing venom compounds. Basically, they're leaving the door open. We don't really know why there are crampers and non-crampers, but 60% of people that have a tarantula bite experience muscle cramping, which is a lot. 9 years later, in the same journal, another case report's published. This man's also bitten by his pet tarantula, but on his left pinky finger. He experienced localized pain and swelling, as well as muscle cramping in his hands, legs, thorax for 12 hours before going to the hospital. In the emergency department, he's given several doses of hydromorphone and morphine, IV midazolam, and P-lorazepam. He also gets methocarbamol, cyclobenzaprine, and a liter of fluid and 2 grams of IV mag sulfate with some improvement. He got a tetanus immunization, but essentially was admitted to the floor for pain management. He just says his primary chief is pain after tarantula bite. He continued to report full body muscle cramps, with the worst happening in his legs. He also reported palpitations, which were confirmed as AFib, with a ventricular rate of 125. Labs were significant for leukocytosis of 22,000 and a creatine kinase that peaked at 1,400 2 days after the bite. While on the Gen Med floor, he was able to transition off opiates onto a regimen of Tylenol, Ketorolac, Lorazepam, Metoprolol for rate control, and he was discharged 2 days later with a cardiac event monitor. He had intermittent AFib for a week and a half, which then resolved. He continued to report occasional cramping in his legs and left hand for 21 days after discharge. 3 weeks now, muscle cramping after that, with significant pain that resulted in AFib and or tarantula venom was interacted with AFib. So the final and the most recent case reports from 2024, it's also a man bitten on the hand by a tarantula in Sri Lanka. Within 24 hours, he experienced generalized muscle spasms, as well as premature ventricular complexes on the ECG. He was started on 10% calcium gluconate, which alleviated the muscle spasms. He was switched to oral calcium and then discharged after 48 hours. All these case reports discuss the lack of knowledge about tarantula venom. It's hypothesized that the venom is a neurotoxin that interacts with calcium, sodium, potassium channels of skeletal muscles, which cause muscle spasms. The hypothesis is even generous here. We just don't have any data. There's a review article from 2004 titled Tarantula, Eight-Legged Pharmacists and Combinatorial Chemists. 10 out of 10 for the title. The authors of this 2004 article, they're obviously very big tarantula fans. They're super impressed with how many peptides are in the venom and specifically how the peptides are folding. They conclude their article with that tarantulas appear to be a good model for the discovery of novel compounds with important therapeutic potential and for the study of molecular evolution of peptide toxins. Indeed, there's been lots of research since their 2004 postulation about how incredible tarantulas are that has to do with their toxin mechanism, particularly for neurodegenerative disorders like Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, and epilepsy. There are definitely no breakthroughs yet, but there appears to be a ton of new interesting stuff in tarantula venom that has arguably been maybe underexplored. But yeah, looking into it for neurodegenerative disorders. Okay, that's number one. Does Kenny more frequently exhibit a venom, a bite, envenomation from a tarantula, or, like UpToDate would like us to believe, or the doctor would like us to believe, which is a reaction to tarantula hair? So let's see what the literature has to say about that. So the next option, again, for the scrotal pain and swelling is a reaction to tarantula urticating hairs. I think urticating is a great word too. There's no recent primary data describing the epidemiology or clinical course of a person that's exposed to a defensive tarantula. The study that is repeatedly cited in all of the papers is from the American Journal of Tropical Medicine and Hygiene. Great, right? It's an absolutely fantastic journal title. The article is called Urticaria Caused by Tarantula Hairs. It's published in 1973. It is cited all the time. All the time. It is a banger. If when you're looking at your academic CV, this would be highlighted in terms of revolutionary in terms of citations. It's a case report, and it's describing a spider specialist who developed small hives on his arms and hands within 20 minutes of handling tarantulas. The hives would resolve within 2 hours, but then reoccur sporadically over the next 3 weeks. Anytime he was scratching his arms, it would trigger an episode. These sort of two-hour, not tiny hives. A dermatologist, fascinated by this discovery, wanted to reproduce the lesions experimentally, so he rubbed a tarantula on the underbelly of his arms, the nice, soft underbelly. 30 minutes later, hives appeared. Dermatologist biopsied a hive and examined it. He found that the tarantula hairs were in multiple layers of the epidermis, and some all the way into the dermis. One hair was as deep as the sebaceous gland, which is about 2 millimeters. It really is a great primary literature, even though it's an N of one. I understand why it's been repeatedly referenced because there was a hypothesis and proven. An N of one, but still proven. The delayed onset of this reaction and interacting with the tarantula make it very unlikely that this is the source of Kenny's scrotal sadness. Of note, these tiny tarantula hairs can also get into your eyes. There's a nice review of the literature from 2017 with interesting pictures. Terrifying, but pretty beautiful pictures up close of the iris. And then option number three, what's happening to Kenny, is that the scrotal trauma is a simple skin infection that's being reported as a spider bite. There was a study out of California and enrolled patients prospectively if their chief complaint was a spider bite. Patients then received an anonymous survey that included data about the spider as well as any MRSA skin infection risk factors. The study included 194 patients over 10 months from 2006 to 2007. For the youngins that are listening, 05, 06, or 07 was the height of what was called community-acquired MRSA. People that had no risk factors were getting skin infections, tons of abscesses out there. New England Journal published a really well-done video on how to do an IND for the whole world because there were so many abscesses out there. When I was living in St. Louis doing residency, there was an outbreak of a single clone of MRSA that ran through the St. Louis Rams locker room in 2003 and caused infections in 10% of players. The MRSA nasal colonization was 42% among players and staff. That is what's happening in the early 2000s with community MRSA. They differentiated between community-acquired MRSA versus healthcare or hospital-associated MRSA because they had pretty different susceptibility profiles. That is no longer relevant. The susceptibility profile is indistinguishable. Genetically, probably different, but no way to tell phenotypically that these things are different. Back on task. The California study. Of the 194 screened, 12 were excluded for a variety of non-medical reasons. The diagnosis in 86% of patients was a skin infection. 7 patients, which is equal to 4% of the sample, were actually diagnosed as a spider bite. Kenny would have been enrolled in the study as his chief complaint was a spider bite, but his response to the intake survey would have placed them in the minority of patients. The onset of pain was immediate. He felt the bite. He saw the spider. In the California study, only 2% of patients out of the 194 saw the spider biting them. Based on the onset of pain and swelling, we have to believe that Kenny was bitten by the tarantula. His clinical picture does not support hives from hairs, nor does it fit the timing of a skin infection. This means the physician in the ED, and up to date, need a rewrite. We know envenomation is real from tarantula bites, but treatments have included anything from just pain management to experimental evaluation of different things that may inhibit muscle cramps or treat muscle cramps. Based on the need to identify treatment options for folks bitten by tarantulas, there was a research group that milked 9 different species of tarantula for that sweet, sweet venom. They tested the lethality dose for each venom and then administered it IV and sub-Q in the backs of mice. The mice were pre-treated with a variety of meds that had been used in case reports to treat muscle cramps. The medications included were chlorpromazine, atropine, haloperidol, diazepam, flurtepine, ketofen, xylazine, lamotrigine, ethanol, chloropyrimine, toloperazone, oxcarbazine, calcium chloride, and a saline solution for a control. It's so embarrassing to read all the names of these drugs that I very rarely use and then just butcher for the whole world to hear for free on purpose. This is the cross. This is the cross we take. The description of the saline controls is pretty brutal. All these mice, they're having seizures, muscle convulsions, hyperalgesia. Those were the standard symptoms. All of the mice that were pre-treated with any of the medications had fewer seizures. The four most effective pharmacological medications were chlorpromazine, oxcarbazine, toloperazone, and xylazine. These four medications were tested for their ability to suppress symptoms after envenomation and were administered at the onset of seizures. So not pre-treatment, but like when seizures started, they gave the mice each respective drug. Chlorpromazine was the only medication to decrease seizure duration. If you, for some reason, actually go pull this paper, the figures that they include for this data makes it look like all the medications did okay or equally as well. But chlorpromazine, statistically speaking, does the best when you look at duration in terms of minutes. Chlorpromazine is largely known as a postsynaptic dopamine receptor blocker in the brain. That's what we tend to think of it as being used in medical practice right now, is a dopamine receptor blocker. But there was a study from 1990 that also demonstrated sodium and calcium channel blocking abilities. That was also in a mouse model. Chlorpromazine is the only FDA-approved medication to treat irritable hiccups. So there's other things going on mechanistically with chlorpromazine that we probably don't yet understand. It's hypothesized that it interrupts hiccups by blocking dopamine receptors in the CNS. This doesn't really match with the hypothesis of the pathology of hiccups, which is generally thought to be secondary to gastric and diaphragmatic irritation. The basis for approval for hiccups from the FDA is based on two case series published in 1950s. Between the two series, there were 100 patients with hiccups of unspecified duration that were treated with chlorpromazine, and 81 patients were cured. So I said, well, that's good enough for us. There was no control group, but patients that received IM or IV chlorpromazine were more likely to be cured than patients that received oral chlorpromazine. That was maybe a bit of a signal that chlorpromazine did something, higher bioavailability. But it's crazy. Yeah, approved for irritable hiccups. 81 out of 100 people were cured with no inclusion criteria. But that's where we're at, right? We're pretty sure this is a tarantula envenomation. We've got a whole host of experimental treatment options for muscle convulsions. We've got one mouse model to maybe go on, and then pain control. That's really where we're at in terms of our summary.
We now have enough information for a rewrite. When the doctor is giving a status update to Kenny's fake family, instead of saying he's having a severe allergic reaction to the spider's venom and he needs IV antibiotics, he will say the following passage, which we have created with AI. We're so fancy now.
The spider venom has caused a lot of pain and swelling at the site of the bite. He is receiving ketorolac for the pain. Ketorolac is a stronger version of ibuprofen and given through an IV line. We would like to monitor him for at least 10 hours to see if he develops muscle cramping, which is common after a tarantula bite. If he develops muscle cramping, we will start different medications. There is some preliminary data on the efficacy of chlorpromazine in the treatment of muscle cramps caused by tarantula venom. Chlorpromazine has been used to treat a variety of muscle disorders, including intractable hiccups. We would start Kenny on the regimen used to treat hiccups, which is 25 milligrams IV 3 times daily, which we can increase to 50 milligrams 4 times daily if the cramps are debilitating.
Ta-da! There we have a beautiful, satisfying rewrite. Not exactly 100% 10 out of 10 comedy, but wildly informative and a very appropriate update for a family in the waiting room. As always, check out the show notes for references used in this episode. They are hilarious. Please tell your learners and colleagues about medical rewrites so I can tell my bosses that this is an endeavor that is indeed valuable to the world. As always, if you think there's a movie that deserves a rewrite, click the link in the show and complete the form. Bonus points for ID-related rewrites. This has been a podcast presented by me, Megan Jeffries. Production and editing by Anne Connolly. A donut among the bagels. Music by Brandon Meeker.